Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. Recent studies are showing the U.S. behind the curve in gender equality, particularly in politics, yet three of New York State's largest cities elected female mayors this year. Syracuse re-elected Mayor Stephanie Miner, and that was a good thing, I can tell you right now. And Rochester and Albany elected female mayors for the first time ever. Lovely Warren and Kathy Sheehan, respectively, that brings the total of female mayors of New York's 62 cities to 10. Albany Mayor-elect Kathy Sheehan won by a landslide this past election day. She succeeds longtime Mayor Jerry Jennings, who did not seek another term. She previously served as city treasurer, has been an outspoken advocate for attracting more women to run for office. She joins us today to talk about the state of women in politics and, of course, about the state of Albany. We want your take, too. With the 2014 election looming, will Hillary make another run? Will other women throw their hats in? Will she get along with the governor? And call us at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, Mayor, I can't tell you how delighted we are that you accepted our invitation to be here today. It's terrific.
Well, thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be here.
I heard from your dog who said that he listens to WMC. Is that true?
That is true. Ozzy is a big fan.
And you leave the radio on for him?
We do.
Roselle does the same thing in our house. And I come home and the dog doesn't look that interested. But Ozzy, you know.
Well, I think that he does. I think he's very interested. And, you know, serves to calm him down a little bit.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So tell me about, I know that you have a huge structural deficit. What's a structural deficit mean?
Well, it's the difference between what we're spending, which is about $171 million, and what we have in revenue that's coming in that is going to be there in the next year. So currently, when you look at the city budget that was proposed for 2014, we're using about $10 million of what we call fund balance. And that is money that is there from years past when we had more revenue than we had expenditures. And when we use up that $10 million at the end of this coming 2014, there'll only be $8 million left. So we clearly, if we have a $16 million structural deficit and only $8 million left in the bank, we're going to have a lot of work to do.
Are you a strong mayor, what they call a strong mayor?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that the mayor is the chief executive of the city and has the ability to make decisions, enter into contracts. The mayor creates the budget. The Common Council has to approve the budget, and they can suggest changes to it, which the mayor can accept or not accept. And the Common Council does have the ability to override that if the mayor doesn't agree with their changes. But overall, it's a strong mayor form of government. That's where the decisions are made.
Have you ever smoked crack?
No, I have never smoked crack.
I only ask that because of Toronto, you know, if you're following, you know, following all that. Are the people on the Common Council your people? Are they aligned with you politically?
Well, there are certainly a number of progressive Democrats on the Common Council, but I hope that they are independent of me. I think that it's very important in the city of Albany that we start to function in a way where the legislative body has the resources and the ability to help work on some of these issues that continue to plague us, like vacant and abandoned buildings, the growing amount of poverty in our city, our structural deficit in our budget, the need for reinvestment in our neighborhoods. We need to have the best minds on that, and I'm a firm believer that it shouldn't just be a rubber stamp, that we make better decisions when we listen to different points of view and when we debate things.
I think it's fair to say that our wonderful producer here on this program, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, thinks it's a very big deal that we have the first female mayor. So I want to ask a question. What is it about, is there a difference between your being female or male?
Well, I think that women do bring a different perspective. And I think it's very important to have diversity in leadership. We have too few women in government. And when you look at things that impact women differently than they impact men, let me give you an example. 28% of single head of households that are headed by women live in poverty. Wow. 6% for men. I think something like 80% of minimum wage workers are women. So issues like minimum wage and equity and pay equity impact women differently than they impact men. And I don't think that it's a coincidence that we have 19 states that have a minimum wage that's higher than the federal minimum wage. 16 of those states have some of the highest percentages of women in their state legislatures in the country.
So why are there so few women?
Well, I think that the path to elective office is a grind. And we have, I believe in this country, developed a lot of skepticism around politics, a lot of there are a lot of negatives attached to it. So it's not a field that is
male
necessarily
type negatives.
Well, certainly when you look at some of the things that have gone on in our state, you know, right here in the state capitol, there is an unseemliness that is attached to it. And I don't think that that's a very attractive career path for women. I often say, I didn't get involved in politics so that I could play by the same old rules. I got involved in politics so that I could change the rules and start to change some of the perceptions around what it is that public servants are here to do.
I love that. I have a thousand things. Calls are coming in, but I want to ask you very quickly, what rules do you want to change?
Well, I think that we need to operate in a much more transparent and open environment. We have to be willing to listen to many more voices at the table. We have to be willing to hear people say things that we don't necessarily like to hear. And rather than reacting in a defensive way, react in a way of figuring out how do we build a bridge to fill that gap between where that person is and where we are and where we can get together.
Stephanie Miner, the recently reelected mayor of Syracuse, has had occasion to take the governor Andrew Cuomo on and get incredible reelection. Here you are. This is a place where both a mayor sits and a governor sits, although the governor doesn't live here anymore, like his father did. So the question I have for you is, how is that going to work out? How much do you depend on the goodwill of the governor to run the city?
Well, the governor is a great partner for our cities, and particularly for the upstate cities, we need to engage in a conversation around how we are going to fund our cities. And the capital city is incredibly unique because we are the seat of state government. It takes up so much of our real estate, and it creates a different set of challenges for Albany.
Like a lot of tax-exempt buildings that you can't get income from.
Absolutely. And so we need to be able to have a conversation around how we're going to fund our city. Because the other thing about Albany is that it's very easy to live right outside of the city. Yet our sole source of tax and revenue that we control is property taxes. So when we make it so easy for people to live just outside our boundaries and come into our city to work, then how do we continue to fund the
right
services that we need with a shrinking tax base?
That they're all using from outside.
Exactly.
Right? And in New York City, they tried to solve that with a now famous commuter tax. But I don't know that some of the state legislators around here would go for a commuter tax for Albany, which would be the natural solution. Hey, you're going to use these streets and these buildings and everything else, and you're going to come in every day, then you should help pay for it, right?
Well, that's one of the things that we need to talk about. How are we going to fund it? What is the equitable way to do it?
Got anything in mind?
Well, I certainly have a very compelling ways of describing what the problem is. I think the city has a bit of a ways to go to be able to hold itself accountable and say to this governor, we are doing the best that we can possibly do. We're as streamlined as we can possibly be. We know where our costs are, what's driving those costs. We know to the penny what it costs us when we send emergency responders out to respond to a life-threatening situation, if somebody's having a heart attack or if there's been an accident. So here's what it costs, and here are our sources of revenue. How do we think together more broadly around how we're going to fund it going forward?
Right. So let's take some calls, okay?
Sure.
All right. Let's go to Mark in Canaan. Okay, Mark, you're on.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Congratulations on your election.
Thank you.
I'm an employee of the state and relatively new to the area. And I'm in downtown Albany every day, and I recognize that you're trying to do things to revitalize the city. As somebody who's a transplant from Rochester, one of the things that I see sorely lacking in this community is a large regional market, open-air market, where all the farmers can kind of like converge. In the Albany area, it seems that we have several small, little regional farmers markets. And, geez, there seems to be so much available real estate in downtown Albany. It would be wonderful if, as part of a way to draw people back into the city, that we could have a large public market that would draw all the surrounding farmers to downtown Albany, for example, on a Saturday morning.
Hey, Mark, I don't want to cut you off, but I can tell you that we are facing a sort of mandatory break here. So I want to give the mayor a chance to answer that. Mayor?
Well, that is one of many great ideas that we need to implement and discuss and make a part of a process that we're undertaking. There's going to be a big press announcement actually this afternoon at 4 o'clock, and the city is engaging on a tactical plan looking at how we can reimagine downtown, and that could be a very important and compelling and exciting component of it.
Well, give us a hint. How would you like to reimagine downtown Albany?
Well, I am going to be giving a talk about how I think it's sort of a stream of consciousness at 5 o'clock. You're welcome to come.
Right.
And for me, it is about gathering these ideas, looking at our strengths, looking regionally, because there is a great farmers market in Troy, and looking at how do we, as a region, move forward and lift the entire region. So instead of competing against one another, they've got one, so we've got to have one.
Mm-hmm.
How do we address the needs? And you know, he's talking about a need for a much broader market space that would capture a much larger number of farms and vendors. So maybe that does happen in downtown Albany. Maybe it happens on that beautiful green space in front of where the SUNY headquarters are.
Yeah.
Maybe it happens somewhere else. But I'm very much that this is exactly the type of input that we're looking for and that we're going to be studying and finding how do we fit it all in. But I look at downtown Albany, it's got to be vibrant, it's got to be mixed use. We have to have people living there, shopping there, coming there to visit, and working there.
Okay. Hey, Mark, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with the mayor.
Support for WAMC comes from Cafe Capriccio, offering private catering for groups of 10 to 40 and escorted tours of Tuscany, locations in Albany and Saratoga Springs, cafecapriccio.com for reservations. HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting Roald Dahl's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, weekends December 13th through December 22nd, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working to permanently preserve the natural, scenic, and recreational resources of Lake George, hiking guides, events, and more, lglc.org.
And we are back with Mayor-elect Kathy Sheehan. I know how busy you are, Kathy, and I am so pleased you've chosen to honor us with this visit. It's very nice of you.
So, well, I appreciate it.
Thank you. We're taking your telephone calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Lee in Ulster. All right, Lee, you're on.
Hi, guys. Congratulations to the mayor.
Thank you.
I'd like to sort of speak to a bigger issue, which is the women in politics issue.
Sure.
I want to say that at my age, I have watched this evolve over time, and I think that one of the things that's going on, hopefully, is that we're one generation past the point where successful women in politics behave like men. And if we can get through that, change that vocabulary, so you don't need to be mean, you don't need to be confrontational, you don't need to go through that. You know, we can go from ego to empathy in a certain kind of way in politics, and I think women would be the key to that change. I was wondering if you had an opinion about that.
I think that is very well put. As I said, I think that we need to change how we do things, not just copy how things have always been done. And I think that piece about empathy is one of the things that women do bring to political office. And we think about things differently. I'm not saying we think about them better. I'm not saying that it's in a superior way, but we bring a different perspective. And I know I was the only woman on a senior executive team of a publicly traded company that was based in this area, and I know it made a difference. And
how so? Can you give us a little hint?
Well, because I think that my perspective and viewing things as a woman, as somebody who had different experiences, mattered. And it was a voice at the table that was important, it was appreciated, and it was perceived by my male colleagues as incredibly important to our team and to the success of our company moving forward. And I think the same is true in politics. Go ahead.
I think that the appreciated is the part that's most significant to me. There was a time when an empathetic woman in politics was seen as weak. And I don't think that that's the case anymore. I don't think that that's the case in the Northeast anymore. I don't think it's going to happen everywhere at the same, in the same timeline. But I'm grateful that it seems to be happening here.
And I think, Senator Gillibrand has been at the forefront of encouraging women to get off the sidelines and involve not only in politics, but in the corporate world. We need more women in boardrooms. We need more women in political office. And she's a perfect example. You know, when the way that she is moving forward with trying to take sexual misconduct and assaults out of the chain of command in the military speaks to, I think, the difference that it makes having that empathetic voice in a position of leadership. When she is talking about issues affecting our soldiers, she's looking at it from the perspective of a woman, a mother, a sister. And I think it's just very important that we hold that up and appreciate it because it matters. And I think it results in better decisions being made.
Well, to both of you, I have interviewed her a number of times, Senator Gillibrand, and I definitely get the idea you wouldn't want to cross her. So the question to both of you, and particularly to you, Mayor, is if that's the case, do you have to sort of rebalance yourself so that there's a tough part of you so that people don't think they can push you around?
Empathy is not weakness. Uh-huh. We can be empathetic, but then have to be very straightforward and forceful and principled about how we move forward. So to me, those two words are don't even belong in the same definition. So I think that a woman can be incredibly strong and incredibly impactful and still be empathetic.
But you don't see yourself morphing in any way as you move into this position, into a more defensive or more assertive role.
I think assertive, absolutely. I wouldn't be where I am today if I wasn't willing to assert myself. Mm-hmm. Defensive is a character trait that I'm trying to avoid. And when I feel myself start to get defensive, I know that I'm doing something wrong. And
really?
Yes,
we
absolutely
share that, but I'm not so sure when somebody calls me up and tells an untruth about me or something like that, that I'm not pretty ticked off about it.
Yes, but I think we have to be, as public officials, as an elected official, I have to be willing to hear things that make me upset. That's people have the right to chime in and tell me things I don't want to hear.
Lee?
Yes. I would like to say that I think that one of the significant differences is that women take responsibility more readily for their part in things not going well. And because they do, they will take a step back, look at it again, and say, how can I make this work better? The difference between that and the sort of, I've taken a position, I'm holding on for dear life, and I'm not letting go because I don't want to look like I've lost the argument, is significant. I think it's going to be very significant in politics over time.
Well, I've interviewed Stephanie Miner, who is a great hero of mine, because she had the guts to you know, look at Andrew Cuomo and say, this is a bunch of nonsense that you're proposing here in terms of you're not going to help us, but you're going to allow us to borrow money to get ourselves in deeper on this. And so, you know, I have tremendous sense of confidence in her because she I've interviewed her. I know her a little bit. But I think she's able to stand her ground, which is so important, not get pushed around.
Yes, but not by being confrontational and ego-driven about looking like you're winning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing that's so hard to do. How do you look strong and able and involved and not, you know, and not be confrontational, wagging your finger in somebody's face? How do you do that?
Well, don't you have to every once in a while?
Absolutely, absolutely. That I think is the thing, and I think that women are poised now to they're positioned to be able to do that without having to take that sort of negative, automatic negative vocabulary about being female and therefore, you know, not being able to really scrap it out in a fight.
Well, you're terrific, Lee. You always are, and I loved your contribution today. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you both.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Your chances of getting in right now are very good right now. I don't know why, but they are, because we have a superb guest with us today, Mayor Sheehan. I know one of the reasons that that sometimes this happens is because people are fascinated by what you do say, and that's really great. Okay, let's go to Bill in Albany, 1-800-348-2551. Bill in Albany.
Yes, good day. Congratulations, Mayor Jennings. And
Mayor Sheehan. Jennings was the mayor.
Freudian slip, I'm sorry.
No, mayor. Unless you were saying congratulations for getting out. So go ahead.
Well, that too. I'm glad to see progressives in Albany. And again, I apologize for that mistake. I used to work with Mayor Jennings, so maybe it's on my mind. Regarding the revitalization of downtown Albany, I have a suggestion. Instead of attracting tourists or temporary residents, if you will, I would like to see permanent residents. And I think that could be accomplished by creating a neighborhood with affordable housing in the so-called convention center area. I think it would attract small businesses to accommodate the residents. I think the establishment of a neighborhood will create well-paying construction jobs. It will bring people back into the city or attract people into the city. It will generate revenue via residential and business property taxes. It will increase housing options for Albanians. And an increase in the city's population will or should generate federal funding based on population, the size of the city population. And may also alleviate the influx of commuters into town down Albany because people could now walk or bike or bus to work.
Mayor?
Well, you know, there are scholars out there who say that this is the century of the city, and people want to live in cities, whether they are empty nesters or young people or even families with young children. Cities that can provide exactly what you're talking about, walkability, services that are close by, retail that is close by, that is all convenient. That is really the promise, and downtown Albany certainly is prime for residential redevelopment. It's starting to happen. It needs to happen at right now. It's happening at the very high end, but we need
exactly.
to make sure that we bring in that affordability piece, and that's part of what we're looking at. We have a significant tax structure problem downtown. That's why we don't have retail. That's why we don't have investment. Our property tax rates are 57% higher for businesses and for that type of space that you're talking about than it is if you just go across the line to Colony or to Guilderland. So we've got to figure out how we make it happen. But that's really, to me, the only barrier. And that's an easy one. When it comes down to figuring out how we're going to work the money, I'm sure that we can do it. Because the desire, the demand, and the space is there for exactly the type of development that you're talking about. And I think that that former convention center site, if it's not going to be a convention center, is a perfect site that we could look at as a clean slate. It's been compiled, and a mixed-use dynamic neighborhood there would, I think, be a home run for downtown.
So when you say mixed use, and we know that public housing has not always worked out. Mm-hmm. So the secret is getting the balance right, isn't it?
Well, I think that there's a difference between public housing and affordable housing. Mm-hmm. So right now we have condos in downtown Albany that sell for between, I think they range from the high 300s up to $700,000. Wow. There's a real demand for people who are looking at that $180,000 to $250,000 range. Right. We have apartments for $1,800 to $2,200, but what about at that $1,200 or $800 to $1,200 range? Mm-hmm. So there's affordable, and then there's the then there's public housing. And I think successful places are getting the right mix and finding the right mix, whether it's 10% of the units that would be either low-income tax credit units or public housing Section 8 units. I mean, we have to build in that affordability factor. But in order for it to be affordable, you've got to be able to develop it at a rate that will allow you for a cost that would allow you to charge those lower rates.
Okay. Hey, Bill, thank you. We got a whole bunch of people behind you.
And I just want to apologize for my opening mistake.
Not at all. Never. Don't give it another thought. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Bye now.
Yeah. Let's go to David in Johnstown. David.
Oh, hi. Mayor or Mrs. Mayor, how much money does the city get from the state in lieu of taxes? How much money?
Well, right now for the Empire State Plaza, we get $15 million a year.
Oh, well, that's a lot. Yeah.
Which is not nearly enough. As much as what we would get if it actually generated property taxes from, you know, that large that large complex.
Yeah.
But we get $15 million a year under Section 19A, it's statutory. And those payments are scheduled to end in 2033.
Why would they end?
Because that's how the legislation was written.
Mm-hmm.
So
remember that in the beginning, Mayor Corning was brilliant enough to figure out that if they bought the governmental complex and built it, it would get around having people having to vote for it, which is how we got it, and therefore Albany got some hard cash as a result of that.
Well, the complex itself is actually owned by Albany County.
Mm-hmm.
That was who floated the bonds.
Oh, yes.
And this payment in lieu of tax arrangement was negotiated, I believe, initially by Mayor Jennings as a way to compensate the city for that property. And what happened was there were the payments have changed over time, but for the last several years, the city has taken money off the back end and moved it up. So we were getting about $22,850,000 a year from the state for the Empire State Plaza, but those increased payments ended this past year.
So you have to go up there to the governor's office and talk tacless with him, don't you? As his father used to say.
We need to talk about the state aid formula. I mean, initially the payments for the Empire State Plaza were put in place as a bridge to getting the state AIM formula, the aid to municipalities, right.
Mm-hmm.
And the city of Albany still gets much less per capita than even Utica. So
that's wrong.
We think that we need to look at that. We need to get our house in order, but we're going to need a bridge.
Yeah. And here's where we get this business about, you know, the things that women bring to politics. And here's what I was talking about when I said, you know, you may have to be pretty assertive with him and look him in the eye and say, Andrew, this is not right.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Rocco from Arbor Hill. Okay, Rocco, rock on.
It's a privilege to be able to speak with you today. So I grew up in Albany. I moved out west to Seattle area for about 10 years, and now I'm back. And really something that kind of struck me since coming home is Interstate 787 bypassing some of the most scenic parts of Albany. And I know that's a hard thing to get rid of, And I know getting into something like a dig, a big dig, is a Boston boondoggle. But, you know, I feel like a small portion of it tends to be buried. I know it's kind of an out there idea, but it really could open up some interesting land for potential development and not just green space, but really diverse use right on the river. And it's not, you know, it's expensive, but sometimes you got to make money or spend money to make money or bring in money. And it's just an out there idea.
Rocco, I just want to make sure that I'm hearing you correctly. Are you saying, because you referenced the big dig, that we could bury it and then you wouldn't have to, then you could have access to the river and everything else. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Burying it, simply, it's actually similar to a project they're doing in Seattle where they're burying State Route 99, which goes right along the Puget Sound, and they're opening that area up to some of it's going to be green space, a lot like what's done in New York City with the High Line Park, and others is going to be business development, and others is going to be other kinds of land use, mixins, things along that line.
Okay, Rocco, we're coming close to a mandatory break, so we'll let the mayor answer. Mayor?
Sure, thanks.
The planned obsolescence of 787 has been a topic of continued discussion and continues to this day. So I think it is burying it for a number of reasons is not practical, especially since there is a rail line, a commercial rail line that runs down the middle of it anyway. But I think if we don't start planning for its obsolescence today, then it will continue as it is. And it is a barrier between our city and our riverfront. And we need to be creative about how we think about it. We're already looking at ways to minimize some of the different surface roads that service it, and looking at how we sort of untangle the web and plan for the ultimate obsolescence. And that may not happen for 30 years, but if we don't start planning for it now, it's not going to happen. But I think you would have unanimity among people who, certainly the residents of the city of Albany, who say that they wish that 787 had never been built. Especially not in the way that it was built.
Interesting. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Sunflower Natural Food Market Woodstock, specializing in humanely raised organic and natural holiday turkeys. Vegan tofurkey also available on Facebook, Twitter, and sunflowernatural.com. Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Annual holiday marketplace featuring a gallery of wreaths, local vendors, crafts, and more, December 7th from 10 to 5 and December 8th from 10 to 4 p.m. BerkshireBotanical.org. And Barry Price Architecture since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com.
And we are very, very proud to have Mayor-elect Kathy Sheehan joining us today and talking about Albany and women in politics, and every other major city in our area has problems. I want to ask you very quickly, crime. I was talking to Congressman Richie Neal, who used to be the mayor of Springfield, and who takes a unapologetic approach to those people who would, gang members or others who would terrify people. Where are you on this?
Well, public safety is critical to the health of our city. And we have too many neighborhoods that for many people are not safe, and many areas of our city that for many others don't feel safe. And it's important that we recognize that we've got to take a very holistic approach to this. Every department in the city of Albany has a role to play in public safety. And we also have to recognize that we have far too many people involved in our criminal justice system who are mentally ill, who have addiction issues, and we've got to get smarter about how we are attacking public safety, because throwing people in jail, throwing an addict in jail, is not going to help that addict. And we've got to recognize that we're spending far too much money on all of the wrong things.
But if the addict is popping people over the head with a bottle,
that's very
least,
different.
At least it protects the people, right?
That's very different. You know, once you cross the line and commit an assault or a criminal act where you're damaging property or you're, that's crossing the line. But I'm talking about people who are sitting in jail for possessing drugs.
Yeah.
And you know, I just had a conversation with the sheriff about this last week. And this is a public health issue, and we've got to attack it like a public health issue.
Okay. Let's go to Robert in Albany. Okay, Robert, your turn.
Hi, how are you? Hello. I appreciate you speaking with me. I want to ask you a question, the mayor-elect, please. I don't know if you've talked about it, but I like what you said, the last thing you said, and I have a question about you working with a place like Trittany Alliance, that they're doing a whole project with getting the community college connectivity down there, and they have a community where they're trying to help people that, in other words, these people are like what you said, they're down and out, and they're trying to help them become resources and productive citizens. I'm curious if you could talk about that. Other than what you said, I know that you've tried to work, people have tried to work with getting more businesses downtown that are catered to the attorneys and people who can spend the money, like Yonos and the Prime 677. But what about?
Sure, right now, sure. I mean,
get on their feet, get on their feet. Trittany Alliance.
Okay, Robert, because everybody is lined up to talk to the mayor in the last, you know, 10 minutes. Stay right there. She'll be answering.
And you're talking about a great, great project, the Capital South Campus Center, which is going to be focused particularly on people who live in public housing, having access to quality education, college courses, Schenectady County Community College, Hudson Valley, UAlbany. They are all involved in this project, and the path out of poverty is education. We all know it. That's one constant, and so we have got to make sure that our residents have the opportunity to find that path to success.
Are you satisfied? Are you satisfied, Mayor, with the quality of the Albany schools?
We have tremendous quality in the Albany public schools, but we also have tremendous challenges, and it is not acceptable that our current graduation rate hovers at around 50-55%. So we need to address that issue, and again, we've got to do it in a much more comprehensive way, with a recognition that the healthcare community, the business community, the criminal justice system, we all have a role to play in ensuring that our residents have the opportunity to succeed.
Robert, thanks for the call. Let's go to Bruce in Ulster. Bruce, you're on.
Good afternoon. I have a question that I've wondered about for years. In fact, it's troubled me for years. You take the countries of India and Pakistan, who have such a terrible record of treating their women, and yet they've had women as head of their governments. Indira Gandhi in India and Benazir Bhutto in Pakistan, and even Germany, which gave rise to Hitler as Angela Merkel, and we haven't had a head of government, and you know, we are so far ahead in the treatment of women. I would like, maybe you could comment on that. As I say, it's troubled me for years now.
Well, I mean, women in the U.S. certainly have made significant gains. We are now the majority of recipients of bachelor's degrees and master's degrees. We have far greater access to health care and capital and job opportunities than we've had in the past. But we still have significant inequity in this country when it comes to issues like reproductive health, when it comes to issues like paid leave. We really fall behind most other developed nations in the opportunities that we provide to allow women to remain.
Excuse
in the
me,
workforce.
I'm talking about two very undeveloped countries, India and Pakistan.
Right, but I'm sorry, then you mentioned Germany, and I think,
Well, let's leave
India,
Germany out. India.
Well, but you're the one who left it in. Okay, so let the mayor finish. Go ahead, Mayor.
So, I can't speak to the dynamics in India and Pakistan where you've had sea changes and a lot. There are many other factors, and I'd leave it to the doctor here and his political science background to talk about the instability that has occurred in those countries in many ways that is different from developing nations. But I think that women in the U.S. still have a long way to go to while, yes, we have tremendous opportunity, there's still a lot of work to be done.
So adding on to what Bruce just said, would the election of Hillary Clinton as the first female president, would that change anything?
Well, I think that it would be an important signal and an important milestone for women to have a woman elected as president. And I think that that would it change things? Just as many have said that we have an African-American president who has not spoken much on racial inequity or racial issues, I don't think that that would be top of the, you know, list of priorities. But I think it sends a message when we see people in leadership positions who are not of the same gender and race as what we have had typically in this country.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. Let us go to Tom in Saugerties. Tom, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you, to Mayor Sheehan and Mr. Chartok. My question is about the city's wastewater collection system, and due to the age of Albany's and basically any other Hudson Valley municipality, I was wondering if it's on your radar to finance capital projects to upgrade the entire wastewater collection system.
Well, it has to be. We have the state government and federal government mandating it. I know that we have finished, I believe it's the first phase of what is a regional plan, and it's one of the areas that we need to talk to the state about. How are we going to fund these major overhauls that we need in all of our aging upstate communities? It's not even just our aging upstate cities. So if we want to have better access to the Hudson River and have people kayaking on the Hudson River, we can't have sewage overflows into that river. And it is absolutely a priority. And we've got the beginnings of a plan, and the funding and financing of those plans is going to be one of the challenges I'm going to have to tackle.
Tom, thank you for that. You know, that's interesting. It's interesting that you say that because, you know, you do have the structural deficit. So people are making demands. The state's making the demands. But shouldn't the state be paying for this?
Well, I'd love to talk to the state about how we could fund infrastructure bonds for our municipalities. You know, the suburbs are there because they were subsidized by state and federal funds that allowed suburban sprawl to become a reality. And we've got to look back at our cities and the aging infrastructure that we have in our cities and be realistic about how we're going to pay for it.
Yep. Okay, we'll go to Marie in Newburgh. Marie, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't exactly have a focus on this yet, but I want to speak about ageism and the older woman who has not had the opportunity to work through a ladder system, which I expect the men do it that way. I'm not sure if the women do it the same way. And I guess my question is it too late for someone in their middle 50s up to their middle 60s to get into the process to get a position where they can express well-thought-out and experienced views? I'm an attorney, but I'm not a young kid, and I can't see climbing the ladder like a younger person would with the same enthusiasm and even the, you know, not only the ageism but also the beauty and the image that guys seem to not have to deal with as much. I just wanted your comments on that, and if you think there's any purpose for older women to get in, and how can they get into the system to work up it in a good way to get into positions where they can work with the experience they have to give. And good luck in your administration.
Thanks so much. Well, I think that particularly city government is a great place for women to get involved. At the Common Council level, there are opportunities for women to be involved. I became involved because I ran for city treasurer, and I'm turning 50 next week. So I don't think that there's any age limit at all. There are many, many different paths to being in elective office or being involved in the political world. So I would encourage you to, you know, if you, whether it's through the school board, whether it's through your town council, that there are plenty of opportunities. We've elected this year a number of new people to our Common Council, and they range in age from what I consider very young to people who are older than I am.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Marie. Yep. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Robin in Ballston Lake. Robin.
Hello, Mayor-elect. I'm thrilled to talk to you. I want to hear that you are committed to the dignity and quality of life of the poverty-stricken people in Albany. It's my understanding that some of the public housing, which are high-rises, have elevators that constantly break down, vermin and bed bugs, and that it's a very tough life on many of them, especially some who are disabled. So that's my first question. And the second question, and I came in a little late, so you might have addressed it, but how do you hope to foster the relationship between the African-American population and the police force?
That's a great question. You know, part of the reason that I decided to run for office is because of the inequities that we have in our city and the growing number of our residents that live at or below the poverty level, and the many, many more of them that are among the working poor. And we need to ensure that every single one of our neighborhoods is strong, that every single one of our neighborhoods is providing opportunities so that our residents are connected to good jobs that will support their families, so that we have quality housing for our families, that those neighborhoods are safe, and that we have quality educational opportunities for our youth. So I'm committed to all of those things. It's what has been a driver for me in getting involved in public office in the first place. And I take a very holistic approach. Again, I get sick and tired of people saying that our schools are failing. We have a healthcare system that's failing many of our families. We have a social services system, housing, that is failing our families. And so unless we all own up to our piece of it and work together, we will not change the outcomes that we're seeing. And those outcomes are unacceptable to me. It is unacceptable to me that 1 in 4 of our residents is living at or below the poverty level. And I'm committed to engaging. I think it's very important that these communities that have been marginalized and disenfranchised be engaged and empowered, so much so that one of my transition teams is about community empowerment and engagement. How do we build the political strength of our most distressed neighborhoods?
The passion in your voice and your commitment is a welcome change, and I applaud you.
Thank you.
Robin, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Okay. Let's go to Eileen in Latham. Eileen.
Good afternoon. Congratulations, Mayor Alexi, and I'm very proud of you. I'm calling because I wanted to know if you are aware of the Albany Peace Project that's going to be taking place. And it kind of is a good follow-up to the issue that the prior caller had. Are you familiar with the Albany Peace Project?
No, make me smarter.
Okay, well, it's based on research that's been done that has shown that when people focus on an intention, you can make it happen. And they've done it in other countries. And Dr. John Foley and Beth Gagne, Dr. Foley's from SUNY Albany, have formed this Albany Peace Project asking people to come together for the month of January. And whether you call it a prayer or a meditation or a focused intention, asking people to focus an intention on there being less violence in the city of Albany. And the more people that do it, the greater the possibility of having a good outcome. They've worked with the Albany police to get records of, you know, for the past 5 years of different kinds of violence that have occurred. So, I mean, they're really doing this as a scientific study, but it is also an opportunity for people who are facing me and thinking, I wish you could do something. It costs you nothing except for 15 minutes a day, and you can look it up at albanypeaceproject.com.
Okay, so, Mayor, because we're running out of time here, any fast thoughts on this?
I think it's, I'm going to look at it right after this this show. I think that, you know, it's that type of approach that we need. And we need for people to recognize from outside of our community that the issues, particularly with violence, particularly among our youth, is a societal issue, and that we all have an obligation to think about it and to work towards solving it. So it's great to hear about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. Mayor, thank you, and I hope this is the first of many visits that you'll pay to WAMC. We love having you here.
Thanks. I'd love to be back.
Okay. We are out of time. We did leave some people on the line, like David and Louie. And next time, maybe we'll get them earlier. Again, support for the Vox Pop comes from Joyelle's Jewelers, Delmo, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry, and gifts. Joyelle'sJewelers.com and Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, BoydenandPerrin.com. And Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft programming offering workshops for adults and teens taught by master craftspeople on a 50-acre farm, snowfarm.org. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/VoxPop. You call it, you call in your ideas, and we'll put them right up there. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbeck. Tom Job handled our social media. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Again, Mayor, thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
And stay tuned now for a news update.